morning. This is the 8 o'clock hour for Wednesday, August 5th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. It's been 3 years since Nick Hillary was found not guilty in the murder of 12-year-old Garrett Phillips in Potsdam. The trial ripped the region.
My granddaughter got a call and said that this 12-year-old boy had been killed by his mother's boyfriend. Yep, that's the rumor.
Now Hillary, who is black, is suing police for violating his civil rights. We'll have an update.
Also, schools continue to plan for the new school year during the coronavirus pandemic. Buses, hygiene, internet access, all are challenges.
If we go to a fully remote environment, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to be able to provide equitable access for all of our students.
And Chef Curtis brings us a recipe for grilled flatbread piled high with your favorite herbs and veggies. All that coming up. Don't touch that dial. This is North Country Public Radio. Time now coming up on 5 minutes past eight on this Wednesday, August 5th. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up, we'll have an update on a case that gripped the North Country, the death of 12-year-old Garrett Phillips. That RIP special report just ahead. But first, here's news from North Country Public Radio.
North Country school districts are scrambling to plan for any issue with reopening in September, and they're eager for the state to approve plans they submitted so they can move forward. Most include a hybrid of in-person and remote instruction.
Andrew Cook is superintendent of Hartford Central Schools outside Glens Falls. He says transportation and internet access are big concerns. The school is trying to buy laptops and high-speed internet.
Right now, we're looking to do that for our students grades 6 through 12. We're going to operate on a hybrid schedule. But if we go to a fully remote environment, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to be able to provide equitable access for all of our students.
Cook spoke on a conference call organized by North Country Congresswoman Lee Stefanik.
Many superintendents on that call said they were frustrated because the state is waiting to release final rules. But Governor Cuomo says it's critical to wait as long as possible because the situation is constantly changing.
Representative Stefanik says she's optimistic that there will be sufficient funding for local governments in the upcoming federal stimulus package. Nearly every county in the North Country is facing revenue shortfalls between $20 and $30 million. Local Democratic and Republican leaders have joined Governor Andrew Cuomo in pleading with Congress to include significant aid for local governments. Stefanik spoke with North Country Public Radio yesterday.
Prior rounds of aid have focused on the more urban and suburban counties and municipalities. And because I represent the most rural part of the state, we need to make sure that any future funding doesn't have a cutoff population.
In May, Stefanik proposed a bill to provide $500 billion in relief aid to state and local governments. Then about a month ago, Stefanik sent a letter to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell urging him to include aid in the upcoming federal stimulus package. Stefanik says she's hopeful Congress will reach an agreement in the next week.
Travelers arriving in New York from Rhode Island will now have to quarantine for 14 days as coronavirus cases rise there. Delaware and Washington, D.C., however, travelers are now off the hook as cases have declined in those two places. New York instituted its travel policy its travel advisory list last month as coronavirus cases started spiking across the country while remaining low in New York. It currently includes 34 states plus the territory of Puerto Rico. New Yorkers who travel to states on the list must quarantine too.
Meanwhile, coronavirus infection rates remain low in New York, with 1.05% of diagnostic tests statewide coming back positive. Still, three New Yorkers lost their lives to COVID on Monday. And Jefferson County is dealing with an uptick in the number of coronavirus cases. The county reported another six new positives yesterday after confirming 13 cases over the weekend. Two more people have been hospitalized. The county said Monday the new cases were not traced to any specific public events or large gatherings.
And St. Lawrence University President William Fox announced yesterday that he'll retire next summer. Fox has served as university president in Canton since 2009. In a message to the campus community, Fox said leading the liberal arts institution has been the greatest honor in his life. life. Fox has overseen major projects like expanding the historic Appleton Hockey Arena and launching a new fundraising and development campaign. Fox said a search process for his replacement and a transition plan will be announced soon.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio on this Wednesday morning. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Stick around. It's tomato season. And Chef Curtis shares a recipe for a favorite grilled flatbread piled high with summer flavors. That's coming up. It's been 3 years since Nick Hillary was found not guilty in the murder of 12-year-old Garrett Phillips in Potsdam. The trial gripped the region.
Now, Hillary is pursuing a lawsuit of his own against the law enforcement officials who charged him with Garrett's death.
Hillary claims police violated his civil rights, in part because he's black. The case resonates with new urgency amidst a nationwide reckoning over policing and race.
Natasha Haverty and David Summerstein have this special report.
This story starts 9 years ago when a 12-year-old boy, Garrett Phillips, is found murdered in his Potsdam apartment. We still don't know who killed him.
Garrett's death devastated his family. It rocked the whole community, and it caught the nation's attention, not only because it was the murder of a young boy, but because of the way North Country law enforcement quickly landed on one man as a suspect, Nick Hillary.
Here's tape from a call the morning after Garrett's death between then-Lieutenant Police Chief of Potsdam, Mark Murray, and lead investigator for the DA's office, Dan Manor.
Does the mother have a boyfriend?
Yeah, well, she did.
That's because last night, my granddaughter got a call and said that this 12-year-old boy had been killed by his mother's boyfriend. Now, where that came from, I have no idea.
Yep, that's the rumor. That's what we're looking at.
Okay.
Now, Garrett's mother actually had two former boyfriends who we know were potential suspects at one time.
There's Nick Hillary. He's a St. Lawrence University alum, a star of their championship soccer team. At the time of Garrett's death, he'd been living in Potsdam for years with his kids, building a career as a soccer coach at Clarkson University. He was in the neighborhood when Garrett Phillips died.
The other ex-boyfriend and suspect was John Jones. He's white and a deputy sheriff for St. Lawrence County. He also was in the neighborhood at the time of the crime.
But the investigation zeroed in on Nick Hillary, not John Jones. Hillary claims that's because of his race. And this is at the heart of his lawsuit against Potsdam and St. Lawrence County law enforcement officials, that from the very beginning, because Hillary is black, they deprived him of his right to equal protection under the law.
So let's compare two of the earliest moments in the investigation, one with Hillary, one with Jones.
2 days after Garrett dies, the police show up at Nick Hillary's house to take him in for questioning. They have no warrant, but Hillary complies. A couple of hours into questioning Hillary, he has to go to work, but the police don't let him leave. Instead, still without any arrest or search warrant, police take his car keys and cell phone away, tell Hillary to strip naked and take photographs of him for hours more. A search warrant comes later that day. Here's Hillary talking about that experience.
The treatment that I receive, humans should not be treated like that. Being photographed in the nude. You know, it's those kind of behavior.
Now, let's compare what Hillary experienced with what happened to Deputy Sheriff John Jones, also an ex-boyfriend who, like Hillary, was a couple blocks away at the time of the murder. But unlike Hillary, John Jones was allowed in Garrett's hospital room the night of his death. And the next morning, the same morning of that phone call you heard earlier, Jones was down at police headquarters. But instead of being questioned, he was sitting in a huddle with a whole circle of law enforcement officers holding Garrett's mother's hand, listening to them start to piece out the investigation.
Including the plans to focus on Nick Hillary. And that circle of law enforcement officers that morning, that's most of the people who Nick Hillary is suing, including John Jones, Mark Murray, Dan Manor, also former District Attorney Mary Rain, who ran for office on a promise of putting Nick Hillary in prison for murder.
We reached out to Potsdam's attorney, but he isn't commenting on the case. Neither is Mark Murray, who's been promoted to Potsdam Chief of Police. But in the past, Murray's defended the way he and his team handled the investigation. In an HBO documentary about the case, Murray defends the choice to have John Jones in the room that morning with Garrett's mom.
She wanted that, and that was accommodated. To do it over again, probably would have done it differently, but it definitely didn't affect the investigation, in my opinion.
And the choice to strip search Hillary.
I don't normally do strip search. This was New York State FIU, who normally do searches of people's persons, and this was normal procedure. Trying to document injuries pursuant to the murder of a 12-year-old boy.
It took years for these law enforcement officials to even arrest Nick Hillary, and years more for the murder case to go to trial. And in the meantime, Nick Hillary was living in this small, mostly white community where rumors spread fast.
A kind of unofficial jury convened on North Country streets and back porches. Garrett's uncle, Brian Phillips, launched a campaign demanding justice for Garrett, distributing lawn signs and flyers all over the county and the state. Phillips was and continues to be outspoken about his feeling that Nick Hillary is guilty.
Everybody that knows me knows what goes through my head and who I believe, and that's not going to change.
Amidst this Justice for Garrett campaign and swirling rumors, Hillary's life unraveled. He got fired from his job. His landlord asked him and his kids to move out. His kids were bullied by schoolmates saying their father is a killer. Hillary spoke with us a year before the murder case went to trial.
You're inside the grocery store, you're trying to focus on your shopping list, but you have to be dealing with, you know, people passing and pointing and then whispering conversations, you know, people ostracizing you. You know, those people in the past who would say hi and bye are pretty much ignoring me as if I'm not even there.
This all goes into Hillary's civil rights lawsuit against Potsdam and St. Lawrence County police and prosecutors. He claims that not only did they work together to deprive him of his constitutional rights, they destroyed his reputation in the community.
So the fact that a lawsuit like this is even possible dates back to a statute from the 1800s and another moment in history when the country was confronting how people of color were treated in the justice system. It's actually known as the Ku Klux Klan Act, one of a few big civil rights acts Congress passed after the Civil War. It was written to protect African Americans from violence and vigilante groups like the KKK.
Which brings us to today's conversation about policing and race, how differently people of color and white people experience the justice system, and how Nick Hillary's case fits into that narrative.
On the day in 2016, when Hillary walked out of the St. Lawrence County Courthouse a free man after his not guilty verdict, his lawyer, Norm Siegel, spoke on the lawn outside, and he said something that could easily have been said today at the protests over George Floyd's death.
You can't close your eyes to race in New York and in America, whether it's Charleston, whether it's Tulsa, whether it's Ferguson, whether it's Staten Island. There's a serious problem, especially police vis-a-vis men of color.
The Black Lives Matter movement and this push for police accountability has drawn thousands of people to the streets across the North Country just in the last couple months. Some members of the community hold up Hillary's civil rights case as an example of what needs to change.
People like Jen Backstrand of Potsdam, who's Black and has been organizing some of these rallies.
You know, when my son goes out, I fear every single time he goes out, you know, because God forbid, is he going to be treated the same way Nick Hillary was? And these are the people that we have to call on. These are the people that we're supposed to trust.
And while Potsdam Chief of Police Mark Murray wouldn't comment on Hillary's case, he says he's taking this broader moment of reckoning seriously. He was at one Black Lives Matter march in Potsdam that Backstrand organized.
I definitely stand in firm support and solidarity with my community, the Potsdam community, which includes all age demographics, race demographics, you know, genders. Potsdam is a unique place for sure, and a place I was born and raised and continue to raise my family in. So I'd like my actions to speak for themselves, not, you know, any soundbite.
There's a lot at stake as Nick Hillary's civil lawsuit trial approaches. For Potsdam and St. Lawrence County, it's liability and money, but also credibility at a time when police are facing more scrutiny than ever.
For Nick Hillary, he said it's a chance to shine a light on his experience in the justice system and a chance to recoup some of his financial losses over the better part of a decade. His career, reputation, massive legal fees. He said it remains a struggle piecing back together a life for himself and his kids. And meanwhile, the question of who killed Garrett Phillips still remains a mystery. For North Country Public Radio, I'm David Summerstein.
And I'm Natasha Haverty.
You can find more in-depth and contextual news coverage at our website, ncpr.org.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour on this Wednesday, August 5th. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, grilled bread, tomatoes, mayo, the ideal summer spread. And after that, stick around for Bird Note at 8:32. We'll hear about the restorative power of the sounds of nature. But first, we'll take a quick peek at the weather. At last check, it was 65 degrees in North Creek, 67 degrees in Watertown, and 64 degrees in Saranac Lake. We can expect highs in the 70s today and tomorrow. Cloudy this morning, a chance of rain, and a chance of light rain continuing into the evening, but hopefully brightening up a little bit. Sunny skies tomorrow with highs near 80 degrees expected.
So it's tomato season and the time to enjoy other summer herbs and veggies. Chef Curtis Hem shares a grilled flatbread piled with your favorites. It's quick, it's simple, and you've got the grill ready anyway, right? Curtis Hem knows a lot about food. He loves to teach and get people passionate about food any time of year. He's the former dean of culinary arts at the New England Culinary Institute in Burlington and has also taught at Paul Smith's College. These days, he and his family live in Peru, New York, where he runs the Carriage House Cooking School. And he told me that summer flatbreads are ideal during the tomato harvest.
There's two ways to go about the flatbreads. You can either buy the prepackaged naan, brush that with some olive oil, and then slap it on a grill. You know, you want your grill to be mostly assertive, I should say, so medium-high heat, so you get some really good char on the bread. Not burnt, but char, and there's a big difference between the two. You want some crust formation on that, and, you know, if you look at the pictures, you'll see kind of the markings that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. That just gives it flavor. It also gives it structure. So you can either buy the preformed and pre-baked naan, or you could buy some pizza dough. Let's say you buy a one-pound ball of dough, cut that into four. And, you know, so you're looking at 4 ounces, make a little ball, let it rest for 10 minutes, and then knock it down with a rolling pin on a well-floured counter, mm-hmm. and then roll it out to the thinness that you want. I wouldn't go cracker thin, but, you know, maybe quarter inch. Mm-hmm. Brush that with some olive oil, put it on the grill. Let it bubble up really good on that first side and don't touch it. That's like the thing I tell people all the time. If you fidget with the food, you're going to fool it up. So don't touch it. Once you get those really big bubbles, you turn it and then you finish it. It'll puff like a pita would. And then, you know, once it kind of sits there for 2 or 3 minutes, you're going to take it off.
It's a bit like making a pancake.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know, it blisters and bubbles on one side. I mean, it's a little bit different because it's not a batter and it's a dough,
right.
So you get air bubbles versus air holes.
Uh-huh.
So when you're looking to flip it, it's a little bit different. But all have everything to do with steam and hydrolysis. So it's the application of heat underneath and it's forcing the moisture up. Our whole key element of leavening this dough is that oven spring per se, even on a grill. And that just gives it that light texture. But yeah, very similar. Very similar. So then we kind of take it off and we let it cool off a little bit. We brush it with some mayonnaise, some thick sliced tomatoes. I like, you know, and this is, I give you a recipe with my vegetables, but you mm-hmm. can do whatever you want. That's the beauty of this. I have mayonnaise, and I think that's a really key piece, and I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a Hellman's person. I like thick sliced tomatoes, and if you can do a mosaic with different colors and different varieties, I think that's fantastic.
Right.
Super thinly sliced red onions is what I use. I call them slivers. I have some thinly sliced prosciutto ham, cooked corn kernel. So here's the thing. You don't need a lot of corn for this. There's no need to buy a bag of frozen corn when corn is fresh and in season. Just take one ear, put it in the microwave on high, 4 minutes. Take it out, let it sit for 2 minutes, then peel it, and then your corn is fully cooked.
Oh, really?
It's the simplest way to cook corn. Then you just slice the kernels off of that. I like fresh basil. Some people might like oregano. Some people may like cilantro. The herbs are completely up to you. And then I like a drizzle of olive oil, so a little bit of really high-quality extra virgin olive oil, kosher salt, and black pepper. I mean, this is literally one of the simplest meals somebody can make.
Well, and it's got all those summer flavors. I mean, you've got
absolutely
tomato and the sweet corn and the basil. It's wonderful.
Yeah, you could shave some Parmesan or another type of cheese on there. I know there's some local hard cheeses. The Sugar House Creamery has Dutch Knuckle. I believe the Asgard Farm has a Sable Valley Tome, both of which would shave nicely on here, especially if you had like the rind end and you just let it age a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What do you look for, I guess, in terms of the cheese then? Do you want a cheese that is or isn't going to sort of overpower some of the other flavors?
I think it's more both a complementary and a contrasting. It depends on what direction you want to go. Some people who really prefer like sharp aged cheeses really want that overpowering cheese flavor. If you're going for like a fresh mozzarella, it's just going to kind of blend in there like a caprese salad with a bread crust is how I would look at that. So I look for both at times. You know, there's no right or wrong answer, which is the beautiful. It's like the best test you could ever have. There's no right or wrong answer. I don't care what you put on there, you're going to pass.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned cheese. I was looking at the recipe and the photos and thinking, I'd love to put just a thin slice of at least some mozzarella on that.
And I might even go like a dolce gorgonzola.
Ah.
That mayonnaise and the basil and the tomato kind of harkens back to the old tomato sandwich thing. The salt and the olive oil is a nice sauce. The salt on the tomato, I actually had my first tomato yesterday morning. I let the chickens out around 6 and I grabbed one of our first ripened yellow tomatoes and ate it. And I had this before my coffee or anything. And it was just one of the most amazing flavors.
You know, you mentioned tomato sandwich, and I got to tell you, that's one of my favorite summer foods, is just getting some really nice crusty bread, a fresh tomato out of the garden, and a little mayo, and that's my lunch. That's my favorite summer sandwich. So, yeah.
I mean, seriously, can it get better? And I think the other one I tend to do more in the springtime, but my wife has been on this radish kit. She's been growing these French breakfast radishes. I like that crusty bread with a little bit of fresh butter, and we now have 2 butter makers in the park. And some sliced radishes, black pepper, and salt. Oh, so good.
Chef Curtis Hem and his family live in Peru, New York, where he runs the Carriage House Cooking School, and you'll find the recipe for his summer flatbreads on our website, ncpr.org.
And if you're in the Lake Placid area, don't forget to pick up some sweet corn basil and hard cheese and other ingredients for your flatbread at the Midweek Farmers Market. It's today from 10 to 1 at Green Goddess. We also want to say that if you're new to North Country Public Radio, we do want to welcome you. It is so good to have you aboard. NCPR depends on donations from people just like you to help keep critical news, thoughtful conversations, and delicious conversations like with Chef Curtis available throughout our region. So just take a minute now to go to ncpr.org/give to help keep this vital service healthy and strong for you and your neighbors.
Speaking of food, Monica, Tawny, Traditional Arts in Upstate New York, they've got a No County Fair baking contest that starts on Monday, August 10th. I just wanted to mention this, 11 to 3.
I love it,
fairs and other events being, festivals being canceled.
Yeah.
They're going to hold a baking contest.
Oh, right on. That's perfect. Is there like a specific challenge? Like, well, it's a cherry pie challenge or...
Sweet or savory. So that's your choice, and there are age categories. Go to tawny.org for more information. There's information about this No County Fair. I love that idea. No County Fair baking contest.
Yeah, that's super fun.
Monday, August 10th.
That's a good way to bring everybody together, I think. Wait, are you going to submit anything, Todd?
I'm thinking about it. I am.
What are you going to do?
Come on. It's a secret.
No, you can tell. Just give us a
hint. It might be something sweet or it might be something savory.
Todd, come on. Oh, jeez.
That's our show. Thanks for listening.
Until tomorrow, Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for listening.